Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
If you consider yourself a Christian, what does Sunday mean to you? Is it the first day of the week? Is it the last day of the weekend? What is it for? Or if you're Jewish and you're observant, you've got a different day, but what is the Sabbath day? What does Saturday mean to you? There's a new poll on Sunday and Sabbath day practices. We're going to be talking about it with Terry Mattingly on this Wednesday afternoon, May the 4th. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
A recent Deseret News poll asking a simple question. What was the question, and what most intrigued you about the responses?
Well, okay, let's start with the obvious. I mean, I've been around a long, long time, and I had the good fortune at several different points in my career to interview one of the giants of American polling, and that would be George Gallup, Jr. And Gallup was fascinated with one or two statistics about religion, and when your last name is Gallup, you can put those fascinations into action. Gallup was fascinated between the gap between how religious Americans say they are and how religious they might actually be. Let's call it the discipleship gap. But if you're looking for kind of the top edge or minimal requirements to be an active believer, going to church or going to worship services would certainly be one of them. So for decades now, Gallup, as a part of its regular polling, has asked the simple question: Have you been to church recently, or were you in church last week, or do you go to church often? And then maybe define often as once a month. They put, you know, there's different wordings out there, but they basically have been going after the same statistic, and Gallup noted several times when I talked with him, Gallup noted how amazingly consistent the results were, that whatever was going on in America, you could count on the fact that somewhere between the upper 30s and the mid-40s, somewhere between, like, say, 38 and 44, usually averaging out around 41, somewhere that percentage of Americans were going to say that they'd been to church recently, or that they go to church often. You've heard the 40% number, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those iconic numbers that you hear quoted when you talk about, well, the media should pay more attention to religion, or religion is still an important part of American politics after all, 40%. It's one of those numbers that's taken on a life of its own. So one of the things that jumped out of this survey at me was this poll by the Deseret News in Salt Lake City, which is a newspaper that is owned by a division of the Mormon Church, and they have a national edition that does a lot of polling and a lot of writing about religion in general in America, and they asked, as a part of probing the implications of Remember the Sabbath Day and Keep It Holy, they're doing like a statistical study of what Americans think of the Ten Commandments one at a time. And they asked on a typical Sunday, what do you do? Pick whatever activities apply to you. So that's on a typical Sunday. And the number for the American average, the number that came back for worshiping during whatever your concept of the Sabbath, for most people it would be Sunday, the number that came back was 27%. And that was one of the only times I've seen kind of an attempt to document a number lower than the normal Gallup statistic. Yet at the same time, my brain was going ding, 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 because years ago, Gallup had always said that he thought the real statistic was probably down in the 20s. That if you asked Americans to be honest or you had some other way of documenting what they did, he suspected the number of people in America that were going to worship was probably closer to, say, 25, which is still a very significant number, especially in comparison with Great Britain, France, you know, and the rest of the industrialized West. But, you know, so this immediately I was intrigued with this study and wanted to see more in it.
What else did you see in there, Terry, that's notable for us?
Well, I mean, it's almost impossible to stop talking about the implications of some of these numbers and some of the things that could affect them. You and I have talked about the fact that, you know, in response to the Pew Forum study on religious unaffiliated people, that, you know, the number that everybody's talking about for the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, in American life, that's somewhere around 25% of Americans now are either religiously unaffiliated, they're either atheist, they're agnostic, they're vaguely spiritual, or they're a part of small religious liberal movements, and you end up with, say, 25, 27% of the American public constitutes a real religious left. John Green, who's worked with Pew off and on for years, and you've heard me say that John says now that if you're trying to document the consistent religious believers in American life, he would put the number somewhere more in the neighborhood of 22 to 25. There's that number again, something roughly being a quarter of the population versus the old mythology of 40-something percent of Americans are active in a church. So once again, we have sort of one side of that framework being documented, and which leads us to the statements that America is becoming less religious. John Green at Akron University, who I've quoted many times, he has noted over and over that 25-27% of active religious believers seems to be remarkably stable. And once again, that it's not an insignificant amount of people, you know, in a culture. And then this leads to the next layer of this trend, which is, what are some of the things that could cause people not to go to church? Which brings us back to the age-old question, what churches are growing, what churches are shrinking, and why? Which is, simply stated, one of the most important religion questions in American life over the last 40 years.
And it obviously, and I want to get to this a little bit later, has pretty interesting political consequences. Not to get political too much, but it does have consequences on how people act in their public life.
Yeah, it certainly does.
But what's the gap here, real, between, let's just take the broadest picture that we can, those who might self-identify as religious or just as Christian in the United States, usually you hear a number somewhere between like high 70s and low 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And then this one quarter of that actually doing anything about it? Is that a way to kind of walk away from this?
Well, yeah. I mean, and I think that's not surprising at all. I mean, if you look at kind of the mushy middle of the American spectrum, the part that I've referred to as Oprah America, which is kind of like this large amount of people that the kind of like I was raised Baptist or I'm Catholic, I go to church once or twice a year, I go to weddings and funerals. That level of involvement in America is in many ways really the norm and has been for a long time. I remember several decades ago interviewing Billy Graham, and Graham made the interesting comment that he would much rather preach a revival in New York than in Atlanta. He said, because in Atlanta, everybody thinks they are a believer. And even though you might not be able to document that with any activity other than showing up at church once or twice a year, it's in their mindset that they're religious, that they're a Christian. And the evidence seems to be, especially among the young, that this kind of nominal faith is where people are just finally being honest and just saying, no, I don't have any religious affiliation at all. Folks in that vague, mushy 50% in the middle of American life are kind of beginning to open up and saying they're just chucking the whole thing.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. When we come back, we're going to talk about the political ramifications of these numbers. Given the current political context, the current political situation, what do they mean? Stay tuned.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly of Get Religion about a new poll on Sunday and Sabbath day practices. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Puts me in mind of the great need, really, now more than ever. Does your college-age child, your grandchild, need a real, tangible, and constant connection with solid, confessionally Lutheran resources, pastors, and congregations? That's what LCMSU is all about. You can learn more about them and connect with them at lcms.org/lcmsu. lcms.org/lcmsu. Terry, kind of bringing all this together, we had mentioned the political ramifications a little bit earlier, but let's get as clear as we can. What do these numbers mean in the present political context?
Well, you know what? In the current political context, I have absolutely no idea. And that's because of the shambles that is the Republican Party right now. And the amazing divide among conservative people between what seems to be the pews. We're back to the Trump question again. Between the people in the pews versus the people in the pulpits and in leadership. Boy, oh boy, I am going to be very interested in the what some people call the pew gap between the religious unaffiliated and the religious believers and all when it comes to exit polls in this election as things get closer. I mean, it's been all over the place in the exit polls, in the primaries. For years, the single most predictable indicator in American life, especially for white voting, not Latino, not African American. But the single most predictable factor has been the more people went to church, the more likely they were to vote Republican, forced into doing so in their mind by social and cultural issues and their links to the U.S. Supreme Court, which actually runs America right now. But aren't you under the impression that gig is off right now? I mean, there is no guarantee.
I don't even know what to think at this point.
Well, the Never Trump movement includes, when I look at my Facebook feed, some of my most politically conservative friends, people of very strong integrity of matters of social issues and how they identify with their church, especially Catholics. They're in the Never Trump camp. They have no intention of voting for this person. Yet at the same time, do they vote for Hillary? What happens to these people in this current election? What do they end up doing? I had a long conversation in New York recently with a very conservative believer who I was just kind of meeting, and we were talking politics. And this is a person with a long history in both religious life and in Republican life, you know, in the upper, you know, in the Northeast, the power corridor, the Acela zone of American life. And he ended up saying that he had come to the conclusion that he was probably going to have to vote for Hillary. And he summed it all up. He said, Hillary is just evil. Trump is crazy. Boy, oh boy, doesn't that make you want to just run to a voting booth?
What needs in the newsroom to be modified in the kind of typical assumptions about Christian America, assumptions about who someone who calls himself religious or Christian, that the newsroom often just goes with as though it's part of their style book? What needs to be edited there?
Well, they've got to start asking more practical questions. This is something that you and I have talked about. We've talked about the TMAT trio, you know, the three doctrines that I ask about all the time when I'm trying to probe the fault lines within religious groups or Christian groups in particular. Did the resurrection really happen? Is salvation through faith in Jesus alone? And is sex outside of marriage a sin? Now, that middle question, is salvation found through Jesus Christ alone? A decade or two ago, there was an interesting study in the Liberal Presbyterian Church USA, and they studied confirmation classes to find out people who converted into the church, went through the process of getting in the church, what determined whether they kept coming to church? Now, isn't that a relevant question to our discussion? What kept them coming back to church? And they thought it was going to be a social factor or a cultural factor, and it turned out that the biggest determinator in their poll was doctrinal. And the issue was, if you believed that how you lived your life had some eternal consequence, that there was a heaven and there was a hell, and that faith in Christ had, you know, was linked to getting to heaven, that brought you back to pews. That was the biggest statistical jump, you know, that they found. Very interesting question. I mean, this might be, maybe journalists have to start asking some doctrinal questions. There's another huge story linked to this, which is the whole issue of men leaving the church, especially men leaving mainline Protestant churches and the Catholic Church, which is functionally mainline Protestant at this point in most of its American incarnations. I'm sure that if you went to meetings of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and the Missouri Synod Lutherans, and you hung out with both of those very different Lutheran flocks after hours behind doors, one of the questions people would be talking about is, where are the men? I mean, where are the young men in particular? You can get into issues of divorce and family mobility. One of the ones that John Green has talked about very openly is, at some point, you have to start taking into account birth rate. I mean, if you have churches with birth rates, at, you know, in the neighborhood of one versus churches with birth rates in the neighborhood of 2 to 3, which one is going to survive? Which one is going to have people in the pews? You look at the birth rates of homeschool families versus the birth rates of public school families in a lot of churches. I'll bet you if you probe those two groups of people, you would find interesting trends among who's in church and who isn't, or who's in church more often and who isn't. See, I can go all kinds of directions from this right now, but it all essentially comes down to what kind of questions can journalists ask that would document whether people are actually living out their faith.
Do we need yet another category? We have the nuns, you mentioned them before.
Right.
Then these broad catch-alls like Roman Catholic and evangelical, things like that. Do we need a special subcategory of, what shall we say, evangelical but not church-going?
I just think that we need to recognize, and this is easy for me to do because I grew up Southern Baptist in Texas. And when you hang out in Texas, you know that there are probably more Baptists in Texas than there are people. There are a lot of nominal Baptists. In the upper Midwest, there's a lot of nominal Lutherans. In the industrial corridor of the Northeast, there's a lot of nominal Catholics. We could go on and on. I think you have believers, nominals, and nuns.
Interesting. Okay, so what does each one of those mean?
Well, I mean, the believers are people that you can document, as Gallup was so obsessed with doing, trying to document whether their faith is having any practical impact on their daily lives. What kind of questions could I ask that would determine that? You've heard me say in the past, how do people spend their time? How do people spend their money? How do people make their decisions? What kind of questions, what kind of journalistic data, what kind of factual stuff could you pursue that would help you find out whether people's faith is impacting their life? Are they disciples of somebody? Then in the middle, you have the nominals, the people that talk about religion a little bit, or they feel this, that, or the other, but the optimal word is feel. It's kind of Oprah America. It's kind of we're out there, and we're vaguely spiritual. Maybe all the way up to spiritual, but not religious. But at that point, you're beginning to get over into the nuns. And the nuns category is the atheists, the agnostics, and the religiously unaffiliated. And then, of course, you do have a small percentage of American life that is still active in the old liberal mainline Protestant churches that used to be at the center of the American public square, but frankly no longer are. Chasing down what a nominal evangelical looks like is, to me, one of the big questions of this political year, because we keep hearing people say that's the Trump evangelicals, for the most part. And will the active evangelicals, will the active conservative Catholics who have been so important to Republican fortunes, post Roe v. Wade, where are those people going to go now? This came up the other night on Twitter. A writer at the New York Times, a columnist at the New York Times, said, you know, okay, evangelicals, you know, 3-time divorced, casino magnate, you know, brusque, rude man is your guy now, right? What are you going to do? And I said, well, they're probably going out to coffee with all of the pro-life Democrats who were run out of Congress. And by that I meant they no longer are linked to the mainstream of Republican life at this moment in history. And do they have anywhere to go? And the answer appears to be no. But if so, that's millions and millions of people who are in church pews, and in recent decades it's been very important that they were in voter booths. Where are they going to go now?
There's one other finding of this poll that's noted by Allison Pond, who's the national editor for the Deseret News. And I'll just read the last two paragraphs of your piece and ask what she means. If there was a surprise in the poll numbers, said Pond, it was that many Americans said that they were actually spending less time with family and friends on Sundays. Americans keep saying that they want friends and community, says Pond, but the whole bowling alone phenomenon is out there and it's growing. What does all that mean?
Well, bowling alone is, of course, a reference to the sociological trends in recent decades that no matter what Americans say, they actually are not a part of community organizations anymore. They don't sign up for bowling leagues. They're not in the local softball. They're too busy for their kids to be involved in anything other than maybe one soccer league. And the implications of this for churches is obvious. But she thought that with all of Americans talking about loneliness and how one of the biggest issues in American life is everybody feeling disconnected and feeling alone, she thought it was surprising that in a poll that was based on self-reporting, on people talking about their own lives, that people openly stated, no, I'm not pulling it off. I'm not managing to spend more time with family. I'm not managing to spend more time with friends. I'm still getting pulled away by other things, whether that's new tech era jobs that require me to work on weekends, or maybe I'd rather stay home and binge watch Netflix. It's a funny old thing about American life that no matter what happens in terms of technology and the internet and all this other stuff, the number of hours that people watch television or watch visual entertainment of some kind never seems to go down. People are busy, 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 but they've still got time to sit down and rewatch, 666 episodes of Game of Thrones.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, it's part 23 of our weekly series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. Today, we'll be talking about Luther's catechisms with Dr. Ken Sherb. Folks, Issues Etc. is brought to you in part today by Concordia University Wisconsin Online. They offer 50 online educational options, making it easy for you to get your associate's, your bachelor's, or your master's degree. They'll even waive your application fee when you use the promo code ISSUES. Just click the Concordia University Wisconsin Online logo at issuesetc.org, Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin, online. When we come back, we're going to be talking about, first, what drove Luther to finally write a catechism. He'd been thinking over the parts of the catechism for more than a decade: the Ten Commandments, the Creed, the Lord's Prayer, baptism, absolution, the Lord's Supper. Why did he finally write one? Why did he write two? That's a good question. We'll answer all those questions with Dr. Ken Sherb in Hour 2 of Issues Etc. right after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Since 1989, the Missouri Synod has allowed men without a divine call or ordination to publicly preach, teach, and administer the sacraments. This will be addressed at the Synod's convention this coming summer. On May 17th, Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be hosting a conference at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, discussing the biblical doctrine of the Holy Ministry and the Lutheran confession of it. All are welcome. Go to gottesdienst.blogspot.com for more information.